Okay, so yesterday we finished off the last chapter of the Practices and Perspectives and then began the first chapter on Sotapanna, the spiritual turning point. And the last two readings were just short, basically listing of what the five lower and the five higher fetters are. And then there's the next quote that I use is from Majjhima 118, which is the Anapanasati Sutta. And then this is a bit of a description of the various attainments within the Sangha. In the Sangha bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who are arahants, with taints destroyed, who have lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached the true goal, destroyed the fetters of being, and are completely liberated through final knowledge. In the Sangha bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, are due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. In the Sangha bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who, with the destruction of three fetters and with the attenuation of lust, hate, and delusion, are once returners, returning once to this world to make an end of suffering. In this Sangha bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who, with the destruction of the three fetters, are stream enterers, no longer subject to perdition, sorry, for the lower realms, bound for deliverance, headed for enlightenment. So it's just a brief description of the nature of these, the different attainments of Arahant, non-returners, once returned as stream enterers. And the next excerpt from the suttas is just concerning the number again, because this is a a chapter on stream entry as a spiritual turning point, the number of stream enterers in the Buddha's time was actually relatively large. And this is from Sanyutta 55, Sutta number 52, and that the Sanyutta 55 is the Sanyutta concerned with stream entry, stream enterers. In the presence of the Blessed One, friends, I've heard and learned this. So I assume this is Ananda speaking. Bhikkhus, those bhikkhus are few who, by the destruction of the taints in this very life, enter and dwell in the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge. Those bhikkhus are more numerous who, with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, have become of spontaneous birth, due to attain nibbana there without returning from that world. Further, friends, in the presence of the Blessed One, I heard and learnt this. Those bhikkhus are few who have become of spontaneous birth. Those bhikkhus are more numerous who, with the utter destruction of three fetters and with the diminishing of greed, hatred, and delusion, have become once returners who, after coming back to this world only one more time, will make an end to suffering. Further, friends, in the presence of the Blessed One, I have heard and learnt this. So those bhikkhus are few who, say, by the destruction of the taints, few who have become once returners. Those bhikkhus are more numerous who, with the utter destruction of three fetters, have become stream enterers, no longer bound to the netherworld, fixed in destiny with enlightenment as their destination. So that they incrementally getting many more as the realization becomes more refined, it becomes there's fewer who do that, but so that it was basically available to more and more people on the stream entry and the other those other attainments. A few inferences can be drawn, and then the next sutta is from Diga 18, which is the Janavasabha Sutta, and it's about a Brahmin named Janavasabha. Thus have I heard. Once the Lord was staying, well, a few inferences can be drawn from the brief introduction to this next sutta. One is that the attainments are not so formidable and daunting that lay people living within society were not able to become anagamis, sakadagamis, and sotapannas. It is also noteworthy to look at the numbers and see that there are almost twice as many once-returners as non-returners and more than five times as many stream winners as once-returners. And this is a sutta in the Diga, the long discourses, and the Buddha is giving, it's toward the end of his life, and the Buddha is asked about the realizations of the people in the Kosala and Mala's countries, and so then the Buddha and Nadika was, I think, somewhere in the Kosala countries, because then in those times there was different Kosalas was a large kingdom, and it had a whole subset of people under them, and then the Magadhans were under another set of rulers. Thus have I heard, once the Lord was staying at Nadika, at the brick house. At that time, the Lord was explaining the rebirths of various devotees up and down the country who had died and passed away. Kasis and Kosalans, Vajians and Malas, Chaitis and Wangsas, Kurus and Panchalas, Machas and Surasenas, saying, this one was reborn there and that one there. More than 50 Nadikan devotees, having abandoned the five lower fetters, were reborn spontaneously and would attain Nibbana without returning to this world. Over 90 of them, having abandoned three fetters and weakened greed, hatred, and delusion, were once returners and would return to this world once more and then make an end of suffering. And more than 500, having abandoned three fetters, were stream winners, incapable of falling into states of woe, certain of Nibbana. And this was speaking of the lay people. It wasn't speaking of the ordained Sangha. So, I mean, to me, it's interesting. So any comments, questions, digressions? Additions. Yeah.
I guess they were culturally more open to the path, I suppose.
Culturally, maybe, you know, I mean, culturally, historically, certainly Indian culture has traditionally valued spiritual practice, so as we came up in means samanas, the description of some meditating religious seekers, you know, go, I mean, there's depictions going back to the Indus culture, which is like pre, it's about 3,000-4,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then has carried on into the Brahmin culture of the Ganges Valley and the Brahmin culture that spread through. So it's tremendous value placed on spiritual practice and spiritual pursuits, and you know, both for good and for bad. I mean, it's like the very first discourse of the Digha Nikaya, the 62 wrong views that like philosophical and practice oriented views that hindered enlightenment. I mean, I don't know how many did the Greeks manage to pile up? Three or four?
62 is kind of an achievement. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just this very rich kind of searching and certainly in comparison to a kind of modern materialistic culture, it's much, much, much more potential. But, you know, given even that, and also, I mean, there is a certain richness of a culture and society that where the karmic conditions, you're born at a time when the karmic conditions are ripe for a Buddha to appear in the world, and then to be born in that, in the proximity of that, in the mayu of that. That's an astounding good fortune.
And that is spoken about in the suttas, that when a Buddha appears in the world, and people who have got a certain degree of spiritual maturity, there's a kind of a gravitation towards being born in that time, in that region, and so there's a sort of ripeness in the field at that time, so that proportionately there's a larger range of people that are drawn to being who is closer to realization and are drawn to the sort of karmic stream of a Buddha. And that's referred to a few times. This is called a fortunate eon, because there was, in this particular kalpa, there's been five Buddhas. The Buddha was one of the previous Buddhas. We in the recitation of the chanting that we do. They have
this morning.
Hmm?
That we did this morning.
This morning, yes. The last group. You have the from Konagamana Kakusanda Kasapa Buddha Gautama, and then Maitreya are all. Have been or are due to be in this particular eon. So it's called a fortunate eon or blessed eon, so that it's a particularly ripe conditions at this kalpa. So they say. Make hay while the sun shines. These are fortunate times.
Had to be in a human realm, or
the once returner? Yes. Yeah, they come back to the human realm.
Which just mean if someone having, you know, attained one returner, that means once they pass away, the next life
would be as a human, take a human birth, and then realize awakening in that life.
So they have a long human life.
Well, not necessarily. Hey, there are some of the So you think in just, you think of the...
7-year-old Arahants.
7-year-old Arahants. Also Bahia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was awakened and then didn't get the chance. He was looking for his requisites and passed away. He didn't have a long life. He had a very fortunate life. But he could have been a Sakadagami who took one more birth and was ripe very, very quickly. Yeah, that's speculation. That is definitely not. But as an example. Yes.
Before arriving at those attainments, is it expected to have to exist some progression, some gradual progression in terms of paramis when to come closer to stream entering?
Yes and no. In the sense that, absolutely, there is a progression, a maturing, but it's not. There's not anywhere where it's absolutely fixed. But what the Buddha does lay out, and a lot of the that we'll start going into next in this chapter, is what are the supports for stream entry, and how to lay those foundations and what is supportive and what is can take one to optimizing one's opportunity for stream entry, and certainly that's where the whole concept of barami comes in very, very early Buddhist history, these are the things that support the maturing of the being, the temperament, the personality, the citta, for a being receptive to the teachings and to the possibility of awakening and realizing the truth of the Dhamma. So there definitely is, but it's not as if there's some fixed course. That's that's absolutely point by point and takes a very, very, very clear progression.
So if one cultivates certain paramis during a lifetime, one can lose them
as a ordinary run-of-the-mill unenlightened being, you can make a gamble on something that doesn't pay off. So, which is, obviously the cultivation of parami is already showing a maturity of purpose in one's life, and that absolutely tends to gain a traction in the karmic stream and mind stream of our being, and gains tremendous momentum, but something like one of the things that is extremely efficient at destroying goodness is like an act of rage out of anger. This can fall or get caught in some kind of attachment that just completely blinds one for however long. And so it doesn't mean that barmy goes away, but you manage to stuff it down and forget about it.
It's also it's notable, even though we talk about these sort of different qualities, say for stream entry of self-view, Sakkaya Ditti, then skeptical doubt, Vichikicca, and Sila Bhatta Paramasa, the attachment to rules and conventions and so on, it can get very sort of, in a sense, it can get an aura of being systematic. I need to get through self-view, and how much doubt have I still got to deal with, and how many conventions am I still attached to? So the mind can get sort of focused on sort of stages or particular, in a sense, quantities of development. And Lumbo Cha's whole style, that very similar, Lumbo Sa made it very similarly, would play down that whole sense of stages or what level you've reached or how much is sort of left to deal with. And the more the focus was just build barami and just to not worry about what stage you might be at or not be at. Don't think about that. Just do the work to develop those strengths. And that's the strength of paramita is what will serve in the long term and be of great benefit. So don't think about stages and development and how much how much work you've got left to do in this particular department. Like, just work to build the paramita and let the development take care of itself, rather like looking after a plant. He would often use those kind of examples of, you know, planting a seed, tending the soil, watering it, providing fertilizer, keeping the bugs away, and then just let the tree grow on its own. The kind of fixation on stages, it can really be a kind of delusion and become an obstruction in and of itself.
Okay, so next little section in this chapter, supports for entering the stream. In this section, we will look at the various attributes leading to stream entry. A picture will emerge that allows us to recognize stream entry as accessible, practical, and desirable. The mind will then be enabled to incorporate stream entry into its view and to let it define the direction of aspiration, allowing the heart's desire for freedom to be fulfilled. And I think it's really important to sort of be able to, because that Chandamula, all things arise out of
interest
or of desire, of motivation, and to motivate oneself with things that are really extremely skillful and beneficial, wholesome, and stream entry is about as good as you're going to get. And something that is, realizable, certainly within one's grasp. Because sometimes if you set, and I mentioned it before, you set the bar so high that you end up getting frustrated, is not so helpful. Even if it's true that it is the highest ideal, but you need to build that momentum and foundation of that which really you can tangibly realize and put into practice. So it's quite so that having incorporating stream entry into one's view of where one's going and what one needs to be doing is very helpful. The following sutta gives a sense both of what someone does to become a sotapanna and what it means to be a sotapanna. And this is, of course, from Sanyutta 55, the stream Sanyutta on stream entry, at Sutta number 5. Then the Venerable Sariputta approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then said to him, Sariputta, this is said, a factor for stream entry, a factor for stream entry. What now, Sariputta, is a factor for stream entry? Association with superior persons, Venerable Sir, is a factor for stream entry. Hearing the true Dhamma is a factor for stream entry. Careful attention is a factor for stream entry. Practice in accordance with the Dhamma is a factor for stream entry. Good, good, Sariputta. Association with superior person, Sariputta, is a factor for stream entry. Hearing the true Dhamma is a factor for stream entry. Careful attention is a factor for stream entry. Practice in accordance with the Dhamma is a factor for stream entry. Sariputta, this is said. The stream, the stream. What now, Sariputta, is the stream? This Noble Eightfold Path, Venerable Sir, is the stream. That is, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. Good, good, Sariputta. This Noble Eightfold Path is the stream. That is right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. Sariputta, this is said. A stream enterer, a stream enterer. What now, Sariputta, is a stream enterer? One who possesses this Noble Eightfold Path, Venerable Sir, is called a stream enterer. This Venerable One of such and such a clan. Good, good, Sariputta. One who possesses this Noble Eightfold Path is a stream enterer. This Venerable One of such and such a name and clan. The four factors for stream entry are an extremely useful framework for investigation. One who desires to experience the stream of truth would need to develop these factors. They form the foundation for what is wholesome and are conjoined with understanding. The association with superior persons is Sapurisa Sangseva. So that Sapurisa is really a noble being, a good person, superior person, Sapurisa. Hearing the true Dhamma, Saddhamma Savana. Saddhamma is like the good Dhamma. Hearing the good Dhamma, hearing the good teachings. Careful attention is yoniso manasikara, and of course that has many, many different translations. Careful attention, wise attention, wise reflection, and practice in accordance with the Dhamma is a factor for stream entry. Is in Pali is and careful attention yoniso manasikara, practice in accordance with the Dhammas, Dhammana Dhamma Patibhatan, a bit more literally, practicing Dhamma in accordance with the Dhamma. As it's getting things to line up. And again, sort of almost a little, a literal translation would be practicing to put the little Dhammas in the big Dhammas. It's just in the kind of a very literal reading of the Pali. So it's like just have that, having things align with each other and with both the spirit and the letter of the Dhamma teachings. And this sense of when we speak of a stream enter, it's not that far away. It's not some mystical stream somewhere. It's this Noble Eightfold Path. I mean, it's stuff that you all know. That, you know, what is a stream enterer? Well, somebody who's, who's on the path, and somebody who's living the path, somebody who's embodied the path, and possesses this noble eightfold path. So that's it's not way out there somewhere in some ethereal realm. This is almost in ordinary stuff we all know. Any comments, questions?
I just wouldn't say that those particular teachings in recent years, I've been very strongly informed by those and talked about those kind of areas over and over and over.
Yes.
And also your theme of stream entry as a sort of workable, realizable goal. So that I feel that's something that's really important, you know, in our culture, in our society, sort of a life goal.
Yeah.
Rather than planning on your retirement package, in terms of the care home or the your pension and so forth, a really good retirement package is stream entry. That's what's going to do you. And so that I did a book last year called Happily Ever After. And that's the last couple of pieces in there. I was really just quoting that the sutta of the four factors of supportive of stream entry, and sort of boosting those as like, look, these are the things that are going to make a difference. And that if you really want a really good retirement plan, stream entry is a way to frame things, and to not to be afraid to have that as a goal or as an intention. And it's also, I would say, it's kind of interesting that of those four, meditation is part of, or what we think of as meditation, is part of a couple of those, but in terms of wise reflection or practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma. But that's not the majority of it, and so that there can be this fixation that stream entry is something that's a result of, you know, profound, intense solitary meditation and such like. But drawing close to good people, satpurisa sangseva, and sadhamma savana, you don't have to be on a meditation retreat. Drawing close to good people, and you don't have to be in a state of jhana to hear the Dhamma and so on. And so that I feel that the landscape that is described by those four qualities, it's very significant. Well, think when we think of stream entry, because it can be like some sort of remote and sort of refined attainment in the perception. We say, well, look, it's supported by these very almost sort of social qualities. So what you put your attention on.
I mean, there's four qualities that are pointed to. Two of them are external, and two of them are internal. That's a decent balance.
It's significant. And then also with respect to the fourth one, practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, and you will have heard me repeatedly say how the majority or the strongest habit that we have is to practice Dhamma in accordance with self-view. I need more concentration. I need to work harder. I've got lots of confusing thoughts. I need to get rid of them so I can become a stream entrepreneur. And so it's so easy for Dhamma to be practiced not on the basis of Dhamma, but on the basis of how I should be and what I want to be. Many, many years ago, Lumpo Sumedho was highlighting this by saying how we create the idea, I'm an unenlightened person who's got to do something now in order to become enlightened in the future. So setting the framework for practice as I am a person, and Lumpo said, ding, ding, nope, rewind. Don't base practice on I am a person who's unenlightened, but rather be awake here and now. So I feel that that's the most subtle, as in most of the Buddha's lists, they go from the coarsest to the most refined. But that last of those qualities is so important to get a feeling for how Dhamma can be practiced in accordance with Dhamma, based on mindfulness and wisdom, rather than based on how I want to be, how I should be, how I shouldn't be, and what I've got to get rid of, what I want to become, and so on and so forth. And that was so helpful all those years ago, Lumpur kind of highlighting that, that change the paradigm, change the framework, and notice what the mind is bringing to the field of practice and rejig that so that it's changing the paradigm for what is being done here.
And it makes me think of the Atipadaya, sort of that the three, what the Buddha points to, three things that are Atipadaya. Atipadaya being predominant. So Lokatipadaya, so the world is predominant. So that we practice with the values of the world being what are pulling us along or tripping us up or informing our values as we practice. And I mean, there's plenty of that in, well, everywhere really, and immediately thinking of California. that sense of the pull of the world being so strong, and then Atatipataya, the self being predominant, this predominant force, and the many permutations that ends up with, and then Dhammatipataya, so when the Dhamma is predominant, when the truth is predominant, then good things happen. The first factor, association with superior persons, Saporisa Sangseva, allows one to have contact with examples of righteousness and sagacity. This association leads one on to following that same example. This next short quote is from Anguttara 4, Sutta number 240. Monks, when you put your trust in a superior person, you can expect the following four benefits: growth in noble morality, growth in noble concentration, growth in noble wisdom, growth in noble release. This is very short, very straightforward, but is a truism. Expect to grow, drawing close to these good people. The next quote is from Iti Uttaka, number 76. This is verses. A man who wraps rotting fish in a blade of kusa grass makes the grass smelly. So it is if you seek out fools. But a man who wraps powdered incense in the leaf of a tree makes the leaf fragrant. So it is if you seek out the enlightened. This next example from the suttas concerns Mahanama the Sakyan. He was a cousin of the Buddha. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Sakyans at Kapilavatthu in Nigrodha's park. Then Mahanama, the Sakyan, approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, "Venerable Sir, this Kapilavatthu is rich and prosperous, populous, crowded, with congested thoroughfares." India hasn't changed all that much. In the evening, when I am entering Kapilavatthu after visiting the Blessed One or the bhikkhus worthy of esteem, I come across a stray elephant, a stray horse, a stray chariot, a stray cart, a stray man. On that occasion, Venerable Sir, my mindfulness regarding the Blessed One becomes muddled. My mindfulness regarding the Dhamma becomes muddled. My mindfulness regarding the Sangha becomes muddled. The thought then occurs to me, If at this moment I should die, what would be my destination? What would be my future born? Don't be afraid, Mahanama. Don't be afraid, Mahanama. Your death will not be a bad one. Your demise will not be a bad one. When a person's mind has been fortified over a long time by faith, virtue, learning, generosity, and wisdom, right here, crows, vultures, hawks, dogs, jackals, or various creatures eat his body, consisting of form, composed of the four great elements, originating from mother and father, built up out of rice and gruel, subject to impermanence, to being worn and rubbed away, to breaking apart and dispersal. But his mind, which has been fortified over a long time by faith, virtue, learning, generosity, and wisdom, that goes upwards, goes to distinction. Suppose, Mahanama, a man submerges a pot of ghee or a pot of oil in a deep pool of water and breaks it. All of its shards and fragments would sink downwards, but the ghee or oil there would rise upwards. So too, Mahanama, when a person's mind has been fortified over a long time by faith, virtue, learning, generosity, and wisdom, right here, crows or various creatures eat his body, but his mind, which has been fortified over a long time by faith, virtue, learning, generosity, and wisdom, that goes upwards, goes to distinction. Don't be afraid, Mahanama. Don't be afraid, Mahanama. Your death will not be a bad one. Your demise will not be a bad one. It's not explicit in this sutta, but in other suttas, Mahanama is declared as a stream enterer by the Buddha and is praised by the Buddha being, because Mahanama was the leader of the Sakyan clan. He was the ruler. Who had the responsibilities. And it's also, it is interesting, because in Buddhist culture, Buddhist traditions, I mean, they talk about the last mind moment, and as if, you know, that if your last mind moment is scattered or is not completely focused, then your possibility of rebirth in a not a very good realm. Like there's a commentary or story of a monk who was as he was dying, he thought of his new robe and got reborn.
It was his patched robe. He was very attached to his old patched robe.
Old patched robe.
Yes, he was attached to his patches.
Even worse.
Yeah, so I took note of that.
Right.
So I can get attached to my patches.
Yes. Just take a look at just about anything you've got. Yeah. Having that thought, thinking of his old robe, then he got reborn as, you know, some kind of louse or something.
There was some flies' eggs that were in the border of the robe.
Border of the robe.
He got reborn into the eggs of the fly.
Yeah, so that not a good rebirth. But that's a commentarial story. And it's pretty much goes across, I think, all Buddhist cultures. So the Theravada, Mahayana, Vajrayana, this sense of this, you know, you've really got to spend all your time focusing on your last mind moment, because that's the critical one, which is somewhat true, but your last mind moment is conditioned by all of the ones that are leading up to it, so that this association with superior persons, the cultivation of the where you know that association and be fortified over a long time with faith that draws one to the to good people, good training, good teachings, that virtue, learning, generosity, wisdom, sadda, virya, sutta, chaka, panya. Those are all. This culmination of qualities are what are really the that take one on, and then that's what the mind reverts to at death. So that even if there's as in the sutta, Mahanama's worrying about, you know, what happens if I die, and I'm in the middle of Kapilavatu, and some elephant comes along, or some chariot runs me over. I'm not really at my peak of mindfulness. What's going to happen? And the Buddha, you know, don't dwell in fear of that. Really pay attention to the recollecting of all of the goodness that you've been associated with. It's really, really important.
Yeah, I quoted that teaching also countless yeah. times, and because there is that, as you said, there's that mythology of the last mind moment. Also within the Christian church, you know, getting final absolution from the priest.
Oh yeah, that's so right. Yeah.
Get the priest to your bed.
Wave that magic wand of absolution.
You clear out all your bad karma at the last minute. So I've quoted that many, many times, and I feel it's a very important principle. Also, I think there's that story of Lumpo Cha and Warapanyo, where some villagers came into Wat Wa Pong and said, the layman is about to pass away. Can you come and come to his bedside, give him some guidance and help teach him some meditation? And Lumpo Cha just said, nah. Just when he's gone, just come and let me know, and we'll go and do the chanting. And then Warapanyo was quite. I mean, I wasn't there. Maybe you were there, but
no, I wasn't. No.
But Warapanyo was quite the sort of indignant, forthright American, saying, "Lumpo, how dare you? That's really uncompassionate. You could go to that person's bedside, and you could have helped them." And according to the story, sort of legend in our community, Lumpo Cha picked up his walking stick and he put it in the middle of Warapanyo's chest and then pushed him over and then leant down and was compressing Warapanyo's chest, leaning on it, and said, "Okay, now, Buddha." And Warapanyo's kind of gasping for breath. Come on, Buddha. And said, oh, maybe you'd like a candy. You like a candy? You like candy, don't you, Warapanyo? Yeah, here's a candy. He's gasping for breath. And Lumpur's kind of still leaning on him. Saying, "What's up? You know, come on. You know, you're supposed to be a disciple. Yeah, and I'm even offering you some candy, and you're not interested." And so, and then after he sort of took the walking stick away, he said, "Yeah, oh, whatever the layman's name was, old Som, or yeah, he's been a ne'er do well for the last 40 years. He's always drunk and fooling around and lived a pretty heedless life. If I go to his bedside and start trying to teach him, the Buddha meditation, he's just going to be more distressed and confused. And just let him be surrounded by his friends and the family and things that he knows, and rather than kind of bringing that kind of extra piece in at the last minute." I don't think Warapanyo was particularly convinced, but the story has come down.
He was definitely impacted.
Pun intended. For Lumpur Shan, it was very, very clear that, well, you know, if you've lived a really heedless life and you've been kind of indulgent and reckless and but foolish, just having the Ajahn come to your bedside at the last minute, it's not going to make a big difference. And so that I feel is a very, very important teaching, because people say, well, what if I'm in a coma? What if I'm in a car crash? Or what if? And that That's such good advice. Well, it's what you've done for the previous 40 years is what matters, not the precise detail of how painful or how conscious you might be at the last moment.
Yeah. I was wondering about the first part of the highest blessings chant, associating with the wise, mm-hmm. but it's not the term saparisa. Is it a synonym for
pandita?
Pandita. Pandit, a pundit, like a wise person.
Is that the same?
It would be similar, but I think it's also a poetic, because you're trying to rhyme. The Mangala Sutta is
poetic license.
Sometimes there is poetic license given because you're looking at how many syllables. And so, Saparisa Sangse was a bit too long for Pandita Anancha Sevana. So it rhymes nicely. It's close enough. Pandita is like a wise, learned person. Which still you use that in the English language. So it's a word that's been picked up in English. But yeah, definitely similar.
It's also one of the suttas I quote very regularly with Saparisa Sangseva in that it's I think Sutta 61 in the Book of the Tens, where it's the Avijja Sutta.
Oh yeah.
And it's right at the very base of this sort of list of 10 qualities or the kind of a causal chain of what. What feeds ignorance and what deprives ignorance of its fuel, and what feeds ignorance is not drawing close to good people. That's like that's sort of the ground of it is not drawing close to good people.
Your root.
And then from not drawing close to good people, then you don't have the opportunity to listen to good Dhamma. Without listening to good Dhamma, then faith is not supported. Without faith, there's no wise reflection through the whole sequence of 10 different qualities, and that's how ignorance is filled up and supported. But if you do draw close to good people, then there's opportunity to listen to good Dhamma, and faith is supported. That leads to wise reflection, leads to more mindfulness and full awareness and so forth through the whole causal chain of 10 different factors. And so that I often highlight that right at the if you want to deprive ignorance of its fuel, if you want to do away with the causes of avijja, of unawareness, right at the very base is drawing close to good people. And so that it makes a difference. So well done, everyone, coming together. Winter retreat at Amaravati is the Saparisa Sangseva Fest. Really, I'm kind of joking, not joking. It makes a difference to make the effort to draw close to good people. So we're boosting our wholesome qualities by choosing to stay close to good people. And the Buddha was extremely pragmatic, as we've said over and over. And so that's that makes a difference. So he put a huge amount of effort into creating the Sangha, the kind of community of lay disciples, monastic disciples. To create that sort of mutual support system, because it makes a big difference.
Yeah. All. I think I'm going to leave it there for the evening.